And then we just, then we come back to a fundamental principle and we try to apply it. And then we have new insight. And then we get to go deeper, right? And then it becomes a whole new experience, a whole new exercise. And then we love it. Okay, so I always talk about Pilates as being like an onion, right? You just, the better you get at it, the harder it gets in some ways. Like the more knowledge you have about your body, the more understanding, the deeper you want to go, the more mysteries start to, you know, keep surfacing, which is pretty cool. Which is why it's fairly easy to be excited about it for a long time. And when you stop getting excited about it, come back and read it a little bit and see if there's a spark still. Anybody else? Anything else? Questions, insights, things that you read that you felt surprised by or didn't agree with? Let me read to you. Here are some of the things that I pulled out of the book that kind of made an impression on me. And then we can see what, this is the list, general impressions. Let me just read this list and we'll go back to these questions. So, uniformly developed body. And this is like verbatim out of the book, most of this. Constantly strive to acquire strong, healthy bodies and develop our minds to the limit of our ability. To the limit of our ability. This is something that I feel like is often lacking for us as teachers, is that we become overly cautious. We become a little bit nervous about keeping people safe. We become a little unwilling, whether that's on purpose or not, to push people, right? This is a generalization, not everybody. But that he really wanted you to push yourself, to work hard, right? Develop our bodies and minds to the limit of our ability. I feel like that tells me that I have a responsibility to show people what their potential is in every given moment, right? It's a little bit like, don't take no for an answer, right? It's not work unsafely. It's not push people beyond where they're willing to go, but give them the experience that they can go further than they think, right? It's like how people come in with low back pain, which is like 80% of our population, and we are totally unwilling to take them into extension. Or we feel like, oh, we got to do this and do this and do this and do all these other things, and then maybe we'll do a little extension. How are you going to strengthen the back if you don't do extension? You know, it's like, don't be afraid to see what the body's potential is. And again, I'm not saying work unsafely. Don't do things that don't feel good for people. Do them appropriately. Follow the progressions, right? Make sure they have awareness. But don't avoid the shoulder because it's had an injury. Don't avoid extension because the back has pain. And it's like, you have to be willing to go there. And then you have to be willing to get people to work at their edge, right? And to see what the potential is in the body. Because my experience is that with most people that come into the studio, they're coming in injured. They've been in pain, so there's fear, there's resistance, there's sometimes combativeness, you know? And so I feel like, you know, you want to handle them with kid gloves a little bit, but I think that we can get stuck in that place and not really willing to, like, the method is like, work hard, breathe deeply. Squeeze every atom of air out, you know, which is not like, you know, it's not like, you know, can be a little bit soupy and like, that is fine. That is fine. That is not a judgment. That is just like, acknowledge when you're living there, right? And you're not continuing to progress people, which is also a case for working with the original orders in whatever way you see fit. Right, pieces of them, or parts of them, or when it's appropriate, because they push you. Right, holy hell, how many exercises on the long box, and then the short box, and then back on the long box are we gonna do? It's hard, it's like work, work, keep working, keep working. No, you don't get to stop. Keep working, keep working, keep working. Yeah. And within that, we're being safe and we're watching and we're deciding, you know, what's okay and how it's going. But, you know, come on. Get your butt in gear. Move up a little bit.
People are just inherently lazy, too.
You know, people are not.
Especially now.
Yeah, it's
they don't even know.
It's such an interesting psychological thing.
But they can do this, you know, they don't know.
When they never even consider it.
Yeah.
I think we lack this internal motivation pretty strongly, most of us.
Yeah.
There's no sense of dedication and discipline. As we have.
So many people say that, I'm not going to do this at home.
Yeah.
I come here because you want to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
and that's what's really, I mean, how many of us always do this stuff at home?
And how about sit up straight, you know, right? Or your computer for 10 minutes then.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Or
yeah.
Take a deep breath 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Stinkers.
They are.
They are.
So that, you know, there's other ways than just lying on the mat.
Yeah. Well, functionality, integrated. Yeah. Pilates has taken way the therapeutic post-rehabilitation route. Which is awesome and fine and great, and it has its place, and it's wonderful for some people, right? And I feel like we can be attuned to that, and we can be deliberate about what we create, right, in our spaces or in our work for what we want, what kind of teaching we want to do, and that we can be aware of working with injury, and we can be aware of when people need a little less, or you know, give them permission to make those choices. But also, do not let them off the hook so damn easily. And I feel like I spent some years in that place because I was lazy and not enjoying my teaching as much. But it's like, and I can do all that, I can really do all that stuff. You know, I can do it really well. But it's easy. Yeah, and it is. It's like people don't want to pay you to just lay there.
Some of them
do, but we need to be clear, is all. Again, it's not about right and wrong. It's just about clarity, about choosing how we're going to approach this method. And even if we approach it from a therapeutic point of view, that don't let people off the hook so easily.
That's right.
You know, it's just like, there's too much of that. There's too much of that in ourselves, right? Just like, oh, well, I guess maybe I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do my home practice. I'm just not going to do that. It's like, really? Well, you know you're not going to reach your goals. you don't do that. I mean, you know, you could say it in your kind, compassionate, diplomatic way, but yeah.
But when you push someone and they do like their first, like my experience with this one woman was her first roll up, like all the way, no spring, no assistance, no anything. And she like didn't know what to do. She was like looking at me like, yes, like, yeah, that was good, you know? And like it's that moment when they just break through, it makes all that struggle and hard work, and then they want to do more. And then it's like the next time she came in, she's like, okay, like I don't want to just do foam rolling and stretching. I'm 67,
right,
and I want to do another roll up.
That's
and
right.
And she does them, and she's awesome, and it's so cool.
Because it is therapeutic to work with people.
Mentally, too.
To work. Yes.
Which is things she's capable of now. It's like, I can do this, and I can go and tell my friends, like, I can do this, and you can't. I mean, she like, really does. She walks around like, with her, like, 65-year-old friend.
Yeah, well, it is a little bit of this 10 minutes a day, right? Do it 10 minutes a day. Do it, like, really do it. And then you want to do more of it.
Well, the crazy thing is she only comes in for 30 minutes. She comes in for 30-minute sessions. Because that's what she can afford, and that's what I'm willing to do for her.
But it's a parallel.
But it's twice a week, and it's consistent, and it's awesome.
So it's when you don't let people off the hook so easily, when you demand that they perform to a certain degree, right? And maybe that's not even the right way to say it, but that you get them to acknowledge if they're working at their edge or not, right? And every day that's a different choice. You're either gonna do it or you're not. But that you say you have the potential to push your edge because that's how you're gonna move forward. That's how you're gonna progress. If you don't take that point of view, then it can be, you just, you are letting them off the hook and there is not progression. Right? And then there's boredom and then there's like, eh, I don't know, I'll spend $60 on this, like, I'll go do yoga. You know, or go pay somebody to jump rope.
This is where I'm at right now. Like my advanced students, I have no problem just getting them exactly where they want to go. We're sweating, we're moving the whole time. I'm not there. And then those my non-advanced students, I find myself being not as, I don't know, not as strict with them or something. And just in the last maybe 4 weeks, a little bit, I'm feeling like, tough shit. So I'm glad we're having this conversation because I'm just finding this. Like it's easy to work the people that can that are advanced,
yeah.
And
yeah.
It's easy to be unnecessarily gentle with people that just aren't advanced
yes.
yet.
Right.
Yep.
And it's not saying don't be safe and wise and
right.
don't use your knowledge and don't, you know, do all of that. Mm-hmm. Progress people appropriately.
Right.
But just yeah, like. Like, we're going to try a teaser today. Mm-hmm. I bet you can do it. It's like, they just need to know they can do it,
yeah.
Right? It's just that it's like, they don't believe that they can do it.
I actually snuck with the same lady into teaser without her even knowing it. She
yeah.
was doing, like, an assisted push-up with the push-through bar, and then I was like, okay, now lift your legs on the tabletop. Now straighten your legs. And she was, like shaking.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, you're doing teaser. She's like, what? I'm like, you're doing something
yeah.
that's pretty hard and advanced,
yeah.
and people that are in their 20s and think they're amazing, like,
yeah.
can't do. And she,
yeah.
I think you have to send the energy, though, as
yes.
that's really what it's all about, is when they come in, whether it's a math class or just a private or whatever, you have to set the energy immediately.
Yes.
And then it's all success after that, because if you let them take over, or even a little bit, and then you start giving in to what they're, you know, talking,
yeah.
or slowing you down,
yeah.
then it all goes downhill.
Well, so. And then right away, you're not focused. Right away, there's no concentration.
They don't have a choice with you guys. You guys, they walk in the door, like you.
That's
you're,
good.
You're, like, I love that. Like,
I
yeah,
just, you know, and it's hard because if we're teaching, you know, if I'm teaching four girls, and she's got two girls in the studio at the same time, but we're moving through lots of different. Right.
Well, we always like just the basics, and you know, super hard, or like
yes, that's
pulling
my favorite
it, and pulsing it, and
yeah.
like we always say, you can go back to reformer one and for a super advanced client, and it's hard.
I know
hard
my clients,
work.
They do that. They were like, could you take
yeah.
us out of reformer three now? We want to go back to one. We like one, because they know it, and they know the routines, because they're used to that, and they're like, they're successful, and it feels good, and then you switch them up, and you're like, control front, control back, we're going to twist and take, and they're like, we want to go back to the stuff that was like easier. I'm like, nope, you gotta keep moving on.
Yeah.
You know? But you can go back to the beginning.
Yeah, totally.
In this way of peeling the layers away.
Yeah.
And you can do all the beginning stuff
mm-hmm.
and have it just be like, okay, do it this way.
Yeah.
Do it with this focus. Bring this attention to it.
Yeah.
That's right. It's flipping on. Yeah. And there is something, well, we'll talk about this after lunch, but the value of repetition and consistency. Right, that meditative quality of like, okay, here I go again. Like, I'm resistant to it, I don't like it, right, I'm bored. It's like, but you have an opportunity to go deeper, right? Because you don't have to think about the choreography anymore.
Yeah.
You know it. You can allow your body to do it, and you can be present for so much more, right? I think that's, to me, that's the thing that I'm finding so valuable in working with the orders. Even though I rarely do like the entire program, right? Usually work with like chunks, right? Series. But that when you're in that, you can just be in it. You're not thinking about what comes next or what creative weird thing I'm gonna add on or,
mm-hmm.
you know, no fancy, you know, something from something I got somewhere, you know, over here. Like just, it's just this. It's this thing that you know, but do it this way. And now, you know, go deeper and go deeper and work harder, and then it just explodes and opens. So there's something about that, creating that framework, right, that consistency. You know what to expect so that you can open yourself up to all kinds of new stuff, right, and new potential,
mm-hmm.
and new learning, and new strength,
mm-hmm.
and new flexibility. Okay, so just to continue with this list, because they stopped on number two. Spontaneous zest and pleasure, which I always think is funny and awesome at the same time. Play. He talks a lot about play, right? Playing, happiness, playfulness. Pleasurable living. Corrects wrong postures, restores physical vitality, invigorates the mind, and elevates the spirit. And there it is. Suppleness, natural grace, and skill that will be unmistakably reflected in the way you walk, in the way you play, and in the way you work. Right? Real life, real life. It's Pilates is for real life. It's not just something you do in the gym. Right? It is to improve your life. One of the major results of Contrology is gaining the mastery of your mind over the complete control of your body. One of the major results of Contrology is gaining the mastery of your mind. Okay, so it's not like, it's not buried, right? It's pretty upfront, it's pretty overt what he meant.
I have a client that I've worked with now for about a year, and she's 77, and she had a stroke 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And so she loves Pilates, and she pushes herself to do. She lets me challenge her, and she really wants that this exact statement, gaining the mastery of your mind over the complete control of your body, because she has lost that control through her stroke. So she understands and is grateful for her mind and wants to cause that stimulation. So this is
great. Yeah, it is amazing. And, you know, it's so true. If you look at some of the work that there's a couple of teachers and Elizabeth Larkham are doing the program Heroes in Motion with the injured vets, right, who are often missing a limb and in wheelchairs and all kinds of things. Like just anything's possible, right? It's body and mind. The only unchanging rules you must conscientiously obey are that you must always faithfully and without deviation follow the instructions accompanying the exercises and always keep your mind wholly concentrated on the purpose of the exercises as you perform them. Without deviation, right? Wholly concentrated on the purpose. Patience and persistence. Unalterable determination. Decide to remain true to yourself. I love that too. Because he talks about, I think, in your health, like it is your primary responsibility as a human being to fully embrace the health and vitality of your body. Like, if you're not attending to that, you are failing. I mean, that's the impression that you get. The reason I love this is like, remain true to yourself.
Yeah.
Do it for you. Don't do it because your doctor told you to, or your best buddy is doing it, or because you want a nice butt. I mean, that's great. Everybody wants that. But do it to remain true to yourself. Right? That's like, wow. Feels like a little bit more than exercise to me.
That's right.
Take care of yourself. 10 minutes without fail. Stir your sluggish circulation into action. Like that's the internal shower. That's the breathing, the pumping. Bodily house cleaning with blood circulation. Yeah, yeah. So again, this you know, incredible breath, squeeze the breath out, use the breath, pump the arms, you know, roll the spine. It's like, oh, get in there. Bring it all out, juice it all up, right? That's the whole point.
I find it too when that happens, like where I feel like when I'm teaching, and we're just, that's, you know, exercise, the breath is so, have such breathers in our place and hissers and stuff. So it's totally, when it starts to get hard, you're like, oh yeah, I can tell Jen's working really hard. It's like, okay. But I feel like we'll, you know, come up from an exercise and people are like, I'm like, okay, get your feet on the ground for a minute.
Yeah.
Everybody's always like, I'm dizzy. I'm like, it's because you're freaking breathing. Like, as much as you can breathe, like breathe. Mm-hmm. And so other people kind of just get up, okay, next time I'm like, well, you weren't using the right breath over there, because I could tell.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels that way. Even to me sometimes, I'm like, wow, it's really breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just makes me, it's not exactly this point, but it does make me think of, I think sometimes what lacks in our teaching is that we like to pull everything apart. And we do that at, sometimes out of necessity to break it down, right? To make it digestible. But we leave it apart, right? We leave it apart and then we start and stop. And we start and stop. And then we do it and then we're like, oh God, stretch. So my dog, you know? It's like, you don't get to rest. Like if you need to rest, then rest. But you don't, do you really need to rest? You have a story that you need to rest.
Yeah.
But you're probably not gonna die. So keep going, right? Which is, I think, important to notice. And also a call to make every movement count. So transitions, particularly on the reformer, right? It's not do this, you know. Some of it's unavoidable, right? You got to get up, get off, adjust, you know. But it's like, can you ask your students to see how present they can stay in between the exercises? Right? Stay present, stay active. Even when it is very possible, like doing the short box series, right? You're doing advanced abdominals and you're doing, you know, whatever you're doing, it's not like, oh, okay. You know, it's like, cut that out. Just do it. And don't stop doing it, for heaven's sakes. Like, come on. Don't just do the whole damn thing. I'll tell you when it's over. you can just stay in it. You can just stay in it and you can keep working. Because if you don't have that experience of what it's like to really apply the work, you don't know what your potential is. You don't know if you can do it or not. Then you just always like, work hard, okay. Work hard, and you can say, well, sometimes yes. But not as much. Just makes me think of that. I don't know. Keeping the breath moving, something, right? About staying present with it. To breathe correctly, you must completely exhale and inhale, always trying very hard to squeeze every atom of impure air from the lungs. At the POT in San Francisco that many of you were at with Jennifer Kreis, she said something about it's a warrior's breath. Mm-hmm.
Warrior.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. That resonates. That's very true. You know, strong and steady. It's not, you know, dramatic, but powerful. True heart control follows correct breathing. Never repeat the selected exercises more than the prescribed number of times. Muscle fatigue is poison. This is interesting, yeah.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Is there more?
What's that?
Can we talk about that?
Can we talk about
that? Should we talk
about that? Yeah. Well, what does it mean? What do you think it means? Oh, wait. Hold on a second. You were going to say something about the previous thing.
The thing that I was going to say is around the whole rest thing is, anyone that's ever worked out with me knows that I can do mental preparation for my exercise. But I also do that with, you know, whoever I'm working with. It's like, one, it's gives them that couple seconds to take a breath and like, but it's like rather than taking it as a rest, it's like, hey, take a couple extra seconds. Where is your body? Yeah. Like, are you talking? So it gives them that, but it keeps the focus and it takes it out of like a rest into like an active rest of sorts, but I feel like mentally it changes that idea, but it gives the body that kind of chance to like reset and then reconnect. And that's
because I love that.
I think you stay very connected. I think it depends on the client, because I have some that the moment I take a breath, they start talking, or they need a sip of water, or they get a
phone. Totally.
So I have some, they kind of stop with, but then some are like, not even going to stop for a single time.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point, and it's not the same thing, right, as like taking a moment to check out. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. It's making me a little uncomfortable, so I need to go somewhere else. The mental focus, I think. And to try to encourage our students to take those moments of pause, not as an opportunity to be lazy or get distracted or check out, which is what I think happens. Right? It's like we just maybe don't like working that hard. So for whatever reason, we all have our own stuff around that, but that we can stay in the work and to train them to take these opportunities to refocus. Yeah, it's really great. Muscle fatigue is poison. What do you think that means? I mean, I don't really know. So, okay, so that's the first thing that comes to mind for me a little bit is, when we have the experience of working so hard that we like can't walk 2 days from now, that feels like that's poisoning the body, right? And we have talked about this, if you've had anatomy with me, the whole like physiology around that, right? So the tearing and repairing of muscles causes inflammation, essentially, and nutrients, right? The lactic acid leaves the muscle 12 to 24 hours, it's gone. And so the fatigue is not from the lactic acid directly. It's the nutrients that are carried to the muscle via the blood, right? And it's the inflammation of that area as it's repairing, right, via those nutrients that causes that soreness. That's the experience of soreness.
To me, what I kind of see when I read this is like everybody that I've ever worked out with or known that comes from like boot camp world or like, you know, that kind of thing, is like my low back always hurts. I do 100 sit-ups and I've never had a six pack. Like, all I do is run sprints. My quads are always like pulling and tearing. Well, maybe you shouldn't be doing 100 sit-ups like the wrong way. And maybe you shouldn't be doing 100 sprints without stretching or jogging first. Like, you know, so that's kind of how I see this. Like, when you just push yourself to the point of, and it comes right after the way you work and the way you never done, it's actually perfect because it comes right after you never do more than the requested number of repetitions. And so I think people think that the more you do, the better it is with Pilates. It's like getting people to understand that that's not necessarily true. I think it's pretty powerful when they go, oh, I can do 100 and like see the results. And I don't have to do crunches.
Yeah.
You know, that traditional.
So focus on quality.
Quality, yeah.
Versus quantity.
Yeah. I mean, you do something right, it's going to be hard and challenging, but it shouldn't make you feel bad.
Right.
I think most exercise in this, in our society, is punishment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you come with that attitude that it has to be terrible and awful and you're sorry you ate the ice cream or whatever it was, and you have to be punished, you have to pay, repent, or whatever, that's what that says to me, is that there's a difference between working hard and punishing yourself.
Yeah.
So that muscle fatigue thing is more mind to me than actual body. It's like, move because it feels good and because you can and you can get stronger. Don't move because you feel like you have to be punished.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting, isn't it, that he says something like this. Again, we see this kind of juxtaposition as if he's holding two truths at the same time, right? So work hard, full potential, squeeze, you know, don't stop, dedication, you know, persevere. And then he's saying, don't overdo it.
Mm-hmm. But maybe that's not what he meant.
Which part?
The muscular fatigue is poison doesn't come from working too hard, it comes from not working. How do we know that's what
he meant? I'm not sure what you mean.
Well,
someone who's just sitting.
Muscle atrophy.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the word fatigue. something different.
I don't think maybe, I don't know, I've read that a bunch of this stuff, but I don't think that's what he meant.
Well, can we find, I'm willing to see that.
But he also talks about working your healthy bodies and developing to the limit of your ability. And so if you're pushing yourself, you're working really hard, but if you're pushing past your limit, you're going to get muscle fatigue.
I'm just saying that word is maybe not translated incorrectly.
Well, you know,
from German to English.
A brief thing, just to share with you guys the extreme of that. So my father-in-law is 84, I believe, yeah. And he had a catheter put in, and he used to walk regularly, and he's actually pretty vital. And when he got the catheter put in, you know, it pulled, it made him uncomfortable, so he just stopped walking. And then he started sitting, and he started sitting almost all of the day. Anyway, he's completely better right now. And we tried to get him to do PT, you know, my husband obviously could do all that. Anyway, long story short, he just can't even sit up.
So that could be a form of fatigue.
Yeah, so when you say that, I'm like, and when you see it, like, you almost can't believe that someone, he's pretty healthy otherwise. It's so sad. And you just,
That makes sense.
It does make a lot of sense.
So I'm like, wow, that is poison, you know?
It feels like it's potentially as equally as true, right? That is and either way, either way you look at it, it feels like relevant. Exactly.
He's also talking about
which is what happens a lot of times, right? Is that we get overly fatigued and all of a sudden we can't sustain the quality.
And people look for that.
The organization.
There is a little something here, and it says, most important in the matter of enjoying good recuperative sleep are quiet, darkness, fresh air, and mental calm. Nervousness is usually aggravated by a lack of proper exercise, especially in the case of one with a troubled mind. The best alleviate for this condition is exercise, so if your sleep is disturbed, rise immediately and perform your exercises. It is far better to be tired from physical exertion than to be fatigued by the poisons generated by nervousness while lying awake. Particularly beneficial in this regard are the spinal rolling and unrolling massage exercises, which relax the nerves and induce sound restful sleep. I think there's another one, but there is one.
Where's that
location?
Yeah, I found it too. What page? 31?
Yeah, that's 31.
Okay. So the if you have this book, the Millennium one, it's on page 20. He says, the whole paragraph is, in any particular part of your body is underdeveloped or shows an accumulation of excess fat, select contrology exercises specifically to correct the respective conditions. Repeating the exercises as stated, at stated intervals throughout the workday, whenever it is possible to do so. 10 minutes, 25 times a day. However, be sure never to repeat the selected exercises more than the prescribed number of times, since more harm will result than good by your unwittingly or unintentionally disregarding this most important advice and direction. Why? Because this infraction creates muscle fatigue, poison. There is really no need for tired muscles. Judicious selection of special contrology exercises will accomplish more for your health and bodily condition in conjunction with the foregoing advice than all else combined. So we talked a little bit just in the beginning about like this idea of judiciousness, right? Like of picking and choosing the exercises that are going to be most beneficial. So again, I feel like it's like do them all the time, follow the orders, consistency, and choose the ones that you know, like also feel free to be discerning.
It's also like do, and then rest and stretch and
Don't overdo it.
So it's like super forgiving.
It's pretty forgiving, and I don't know, for a long time, I feel like, and sometimes it feels true. It's like the classical approach often feels like unrelenting, unforgiving. No discernment whatsoever, which is
if you read just the first,
it tells me it just depends on who it's coming from.
Yeah.
Which seems really obvious, but I think we get very much in like there's this camp and then there's this camp. There's this way of doing it, which is either the right or wrong way, or better way or less better.
Yeah.
and then there's this other way, you know, so instead of like, it can be this way and it can be this way.
Well, and then you have to throw in the variable of the client that you're working with, right?
Yeah. I think that's the judiciousness, though. He's telling you as the practitioner, pick and choose what feels most beneficial and then do those consistently. It's like, you don't have to like pistol whip yourself, you know, to do all the exercises if you have spinal fusion, right? Or stenosis or something where it's osteoporosis that actually prevents you from doing some of the exercises. Okay, don't do those.
Yeah.
Or find a way to hold the intent of those exercises and modify them. So I feel like he's at the same time giving us permission to
be creative.
Be thoughtful and creative.
I think it's really all about the holistic view on the whole body. And it's not just, you know, holding the muscles. It's balance.
Balance. Mental balance.
And
physical
that goes
balance.
Back to being very effective about, you know, how many reps you do and keeping it, you know, true to form.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's, you know, all about. Pilates is all about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I have a question.
Yes.
I'm going to play devil's advocate in a way. So muscle fatigue, in my mind, is that you can do a series of exercises and you're exhausted afterwards. You have worked those muscles, and so you need to take a minute and just readjust for the next set or whatever you're going to do. So in my mind, what I try to think about and tell my clients is I want them to know the difference between muscle fatigue and muscle pain.
Yeah, pain.
And because I have some aging clients that I work with, and I want to work them hard, but I want to give them the freedom to understand what their body is feeling and know when to stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is my definition of muscle fatigue. But I understand what he's talking about, where you go to a boot camp and you just get your ass kicked, and your quads, you can barely lift your knees to walk the
and
next
you can't
day.
Pee.
Right. Yeah, I haven't experienced that one yet. But then that is the muscle fatigue that Joseph Pilates is talking about?
Well, I mean, you experience muscle fatigue when you do the hundreds, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, whew, work, right? And then you're going to experience muscle fatigue when you do the class later.
For sure.
Yeah, but it's like, Kristen, did you say about, we were talking about form, mm-hmm. right? To the point where you lose the quality.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, to me, that's, the boundaries are fatigue to pain, right? We're not moving into pain, but we are working through intensity. In lots of instances, and staying mentally focused, even though we really want to be anywhere else. Like, that's like me. I'm lazy. I'm not, like, I don't really love to work all that hard, honestly. So I need somebody to help me do that. But, and also then, like, when I can no longer really feel like I'm doing the exercise well, which a lot of times for me is when I go too fast, like, for everybody, maybe. Like too fast, it's like I'm just like I can't like get in, I can't zone in, I can't like hold the quality. So I feel like those are the boundaries for me in relationship to muscle fatigue. If I'm too fatigued that I'm in pain, or I'm too fatigued that I can't really maintain good form, mm-hmm. and I'm starting to hurt,
okay.
then that feels like I need to back off or stop or. I think that maybe it just, there's a couple of things going on. One is reframing or being able to delineate between Pilates as exercise only, right? Where we might see just like, you know, as a generalization, no, you know, negativity intended, but like a big group class, right, in a gym, where it's like, it's just fitness, it's just, you know, exercise. There's maybe very little teaching.
A lot of rigor.
Rigor, intensity, fine, going through the exercises, but then maybe intention is lacking, right, awareness. So as a teacher, we can direct our students' attention to specific intentions, right, and doing the movement with certain intentions, which I feel like is the difference between teaching Pilates rigorously and teaching Pilates as exercise, which is really just exercise. It feels like it stops being Pilates like as a philosophy movement form. So I think just that rigor does not mean that there's nothing else there, right? That there's no intention, that there's no thoughtfulness, that there's no clear direction. Like all, I think all that can be present, right? And so that just that right. being clear, like what's the intention of the teacher? Where are they directing your attention? How do you do that as a teacher? And I would venture to guess, because I've seen Brent teach a kick-ass class. I've been in a class where he has brutalized us. Mm-hmm. So, and I would say that you have to appreciate yourself and other teachers as dynamic, right? To at least give them the benefit of the doubt that they are dynamic, that they have the capacity and the ability and perhaps the desire to teach in both ways.
Yeah, you can have both at the same time. Yeah, and you can have precision and rigor at the same
you
time.
You can. And or somebody
you can,
like,
or you can have a rhythm.
You can. Know, and you can teach the way Madeline teaches, and you can teach the way Elizabeth Larkham teaches really on purpose. Because for you, it's like, what I want you to get out of today, besides getting familiar with this text, is to just start to determine what's your point of view. Like, why do you do what you do the way you do it? And if you don't know, figure it out. Start to find out, right? So that these teachers that we're all learning from have different, very strong points of view,
right?
Jennifer Kreese has a very strong point of view. Brent has a very strong point of view. Elizabeth has, at Madeline. It's like they're making the conscious effort within, to me, what feels like the intention and philosophy of the Pilates method. So I also don't feel like it's an and or. I feel like as a teacher, I want to be able to teach rigorously, and I want to be able to teach differently too.
We do. I feel like in the morning, we have different clients coming in based upon, like, we have that group of people that like that type of style. And then as we go through our day, like, our 12 o'clock clients, our 1 o'clock clients, like we don't come in like that.
Yeah. And by 5 o'clock, it's a restorative class.
We just kind of see what we do intake, and we have some sessions with people like what their style is. Not even just kind of going with what they want to do, but
yeah,
you know where to go and what they need and where to push them, and how people come into the studio at different times.
Yeah, and that you cultivate yourself as a teacher who can do both.
Yeah, exactly.
And to
like,
see the value in both.
When I went to Jennifer Kreese, she just was like, this is it.
Yeah,
and her smile was like, we did a 2-hour mat class. She kicked my ass and she was like, get your legs up. I'm like, you're killing me right now. And she was like, you love it. It's the same thing. She teaches how he feels. Like, it is your life. Like, it's your life work. You know, like, you should feel this way about what you're teaching so that other people feel that and have that vigor and have. And really feel like when you're teaching that it's, you're connecting. And I don't feel like she was this bossy, I mean, she was hard. But she was like, with a smile, like it was like she just made you feel good about what you were doing, but also kicked your ass at the same time. And then explained to you why. Like why this works and why she did it every single day. But everybody felt cohesive and felt good about the work, you know? It doesn't mean to go home. It does take it to the next level. It does.
And I would venture to guess that in her own studio, she's having quiet moments with students. So she has a strong viewpoint. And we love a lot about it.
Yeah. But doesn't mean you take it home and you practice that every day.
And it doesn't mean it's
better.
No.
It's just good to be open the box in here.
It is good to be open to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can be open to that as much as you're open to Britt's style and Madeline's style. And then you just, you create your own viewpoint and an incredibly strong place to stand in your teaching. And then you bring to it all your nuances and all your opinions and all your, you know, all your stuff.
Yeah.
But it just feels like, yeah, I mean, ultimately, looking at this text in order to see what is the intention, mm-hmm. right? And then are we teaching from that intention or not? When are we choosing to and when are we choosing not? Let me pose some of these questions, the inquiry questions. Do you have a strong point of view on work that you do? And then to come up with as many ways as you can think of that you take a clear, firm, passionate, meaningful stand on your teaching. So I would actually like you to spend a few minutes doing that before we break. Making some notes either on this sheet or in your whatever you have to write on. And then how can you embody the vision that Joseph Pilates had for people to truly love and appreciate their lives by being unfailingly dedicated to their own health? And then this is the quote, this is from Your Health, the second little book. Generally speaking, the less the average person merely talks about health, the better it is for his health. Not only is health a normal condition, but it is a duty, not only to attain, but to maintain it. How many of us, or rather how few of us, realize what life really is? Mm-hmm. And so again, to me, this resonates on the self-care, self-practice level of like, we take it for granted, right? We really do, that we have a human body. It becomes effortful, it becomes punishments, we're making up for something, we have to go to the gym. But that health is meant to be the normal state of things, right? Not ill health. And I feel like culturally, perhaps, we begin to feel like ill health is the normal state of things, right? And so all we're doing is constantly trying to combat things. It's not totally untrue, but it's a point of view or a mind state that I think is important to look at. So just this idea that don't take it for granted. You do have a duty to take care of yourself as best you can. And so how do you feel like you're either doing that or not doing that? You have resistance to that. You do it easily. You do it, but it's a struggle. And then how does that translate? How does your experience of taking care of yourself translate to how you can actually take care of your students or encourage them to take care of themselves? Right? Because we don't actually want our students to be beholden to us. That is also not the point of Pilates. No. It is not the point to get people to come in and pay us lots of money twice a week, three times a week, all the time. I mean, of course, it's our livelihood, we want to, but it is the point to make them independent, mm-hmm. right? To teach them, to educate mm-hmm. them, and to help them find their own internal motivation and drive to take care of themselves. So, and I feel like this is the big tipping point for people doing home practice or not doing home practice. That you have a responsibility to take care of your health. You do. If not for you, then for the people who depend on you. But still, for you. So if we can't do it, we really can never expect other people. You can pretend, probably get away with pretending, but that's gonna come up down the road. So how do you do that? How do you not do that? Come up with several ways you are an example of this and are not. It's not to be self-deprecating or, you know, mean to yourself, just honest. Does it feel important to embody this aspect of the Pilates philosophy in order to be an effective teacher? And then how can you use the Pilates principles to achieve one of the primary goals of Pilates, the balance of mind and body? So maybe this is a question just to take home with you later to consider. How are you using the Pilates principles to promote actively, maybe not like entirely overtly, but actively promoting this development of body and mind? And so that will be maybe a take home question.